Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. On this Monday, September, they get my phone out.
26th.
It's the 26th. September the 26th. And good to have you listening. I'm Tim Wildman, as I told you. Ed Battagliano co-hosting with me this morning. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim, and a happy Debate Monday to you.
Same back to you, Ed. And it is a big day for television ratings, and Fred Jackson, news director for American Family Radio and OneNewsNow.com, is in studio with us. So we're going to talk about the debate tonight. Fred, is this going to shatter Aloha from Hawaii with Elvis in 1973 or 74? I don't even know if that's the most viewed television show of all time, but I mean, I just know that was
huge.
Back in the, what's going to happen tonight? They're talking about
100 million people going to view this. They're talking, you know, Europeans going to get up early,
yeah,
and watch this. 100 million people.
It's a Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
He's going to get more viewers than the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well.
I don't think that's. Because that's
not possible.
That's like a billion people worldwide or something.
But what about in the U.S.? Do we even know? Anyway, it may be the most watched television event in U.S. history.
Some are calling it the debate of the century for U.S. politics.
It is historic. It's the first time you'll have a male and female.
That's true.
Presidential candidates.
And I think it's because of the seriousness and the gravity of the issues and because both are great thinkers and speakers, the intellectual dynamite that's going to be there tonight. I think you pour all that in together, you have a recipe for Americans sitting down, making a serious-minded choice.
It's going to be better than the Lincoln-Douglas debate, is what you're saying.
I think it's
more intellectual firepower.
I don't think this has anything to do with the personalities involved or the celebrities involved or the fact that Trump will say anything. And that do you guys?
So you don't think it's anything that could? I mean, we're talking about serious viewers looking in, not pay per view.
That's the American public
not
tonight.
Pay per view people.
No, they're not. They're not looking for who
watch MMA, mixed martial arts, fights.
I think it's a combo of both. I think it's probably more the Trump factor.
It's the freak show kind of thing.
If this were another Republican candidate, the audience would be half the size of what it's going to be tonight. But because of Trump, I got to give the guy his due. Okay, I'm not big on people who brag on themselves.
Right.
But he's right. He does draw. He helps television's ratings.
Well, and it's not that's not just an opinion. Look at what's been happening with the crowds.
Oh, right. My goodness.
He has turned away crowds. We don't have room for you. You know, Hillary Clinton is doing well, and her camp admits this. They get 300, 400 out. Yeah. They're happy.
Yeah, but you have to provide drinks. I mean, you've got to do more than just say Hillary's coming. You've got to give them something free.
Got to give them something.
And Trump did this with the Republican debates.
Yeah.
The Republican debates drew a lot of viewership, especially early on when everyone just wanted to, I got to see what this guy has
to say. Maybe I need to give the American public a little bit more credit. I do think that.
No.
Okay, Ed. For whatever reason, tonight will be a huge. And what's at stake here, do you think, Fred? Because don't you think most people already made up their mind, though?
Well, here's what's been happening. Over the last two or three weeks since Trump got a new leadership team in, he's changed his approach, kind of a little bit more reserved, at least in the formal speeches.
Helped him a lot, in my opinion.
Yeah, helped him a whole lot. The polls are showing this. New Bloomberg poll out this morning has got him up a couple of points in a general election. Quinnipiac poll is out, and he's just behind 1 point, so it's essentially a tie with Clinton. In some states like Ohio, he's now leading Clinton. And so something is happening. On top of that, you add to that the controversies over Hillary's health, those pictures that have come out, the angry video that we all saw last week where she was kind of screaming at the camera.
That was bizarre.
That really was. I mean, was that a strategy of her handlers to put that video out there?
For people who don't know what we're talking about, Hillary Clinton was doing a video conferencing with a union group in Las Vegas. I think she was back in New York. So she's doing a teleconference, if you will, and she's looking into the camera, and I don't know that she can even see the audience she's talking to, but do you have that, Brent? See if you can find. She just gets angry at nobody. There's no audience to get angry at. There's Trump's not there. She just, her voice starts raging. It's bizarre.
That's well, and one of the things we've been talking about, you just around the offices, is she is asking the audience, which again, as you said, she can't actually see. She's just talking through this, through the teleconferencing, and she says, "You might ask, why aren't I up by 50 points?" And then she tries to go on and answer it, but I'm thinking, you don't ask that question and make the people watching
right.
answer the question.
Right.
Well, the reason you're not up by 50 points, I guess, is because you're a crook, or you blew the right. Our foreign policy, or So
well, way she asked, you got it. We're going to play that clip. It was all over the news last week. This is the clip from Hillary Clinton talking to this group via video teleconferencing, and this is what she sounded like.
Collectively, and I will fight back against so-called right to work. Right to work is wrong for workers and wrong for America. Now, having said all this, why aren't I 50 points ahead, you might ask? Well, the choice for working families has never been clearer. I need your help to get Donald Trump's record out to everybody. Nobody should be fooled. He proudly declared himself 100% right to work. He even hired a union-busting firm to break up an organizing campaign at his hotel in Las Vegas, where you are right now. And he built up his wealth by stiffing small businesses and contractors. Mm. That goes against everything we stand for as a country. My dad was a small business. I'm just a businessman. I'm just happy he never did business with Trump.
Anyway, so why aren't I 50 points up right now, you might ask? Well, let me tell you something. Wow.
It actually, that was audio. It actually looks worse.
Yes,
her watching the video.
Her eyes are popping.
Yeah.
She's getting visually angry at the wrong people because those people are just at a conference to hear her.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this is going to damage her as a standalone moment.
That doesn't help.
But if you put it together with other things that have been going on in her campaign, it was not a wise move. Fred, like you mentioned, I don't know who her handlers were. This must have been a scripted speech. Now, the way she delivered it, maybe she just thought, when I used to get on the phone long distance, the old corded phones, and talk to my grandparents, I would tend to raise my voice. You think, they're long distance, I need to speak louder. So that part I can understand, but that question, it had to be in the script. Why aren't I up 50 points? That just highlights her weakness against Trump.
I know, exactly, and you're right. If the audience was right in front of her, somebody put up their hand.
Yeah.
I have an answer to that.
Yeah, and quit spitting on us.
Well, it's one thing for a candidate to speak loudly when you're at a place where
rally?
You're giving a rally, there's people talking and yelling and you're they're clapping and you're talking over all that. But she's sitting in a studio, nobody else there but the poor guy behind the camera, and she's talking to these people and she's yelling. It just was. It had a kind of bizarre
feel
for it.
It's the yell and it was the facial expressions. You had to see her.
Yeah, go on the internet and see it.
I mean, she was just ripped. Snorting
right,
mad.
Right, yeah.
She was. And she's talking to supposedly friendly people to her cause.
Yeah.
But all of this adds up. We ask why 100 million people want to watch It's all of these things. These are two interesting characters.
Right.
They really are. Everybody in the nation knows who Hillary Clinton is. Everybody in the nation knows who Donald Trump is because of what's happened over the last several months.
Well, this is King Kong versus Godzilla.
Oh, it is.
I mean, this is
which one is which?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying.
Yeah, let's hear your opinion on that.
The point I'm making, it's
I'm
really
saying Hillary's Godzilla. I really am fire breathing.
I think that's Trump.
You think it's Trump?
The fire breather. But okay. Now I don't want to get.
Trump beats his chest.
Yeah,
Hillary
well, that's
breathes
true.
Fire.
I don't want anyone saying you called Hillary Clinton a gorilla.
No.
All right, I'm just using it as a metaphor, people. A metaphor. Help me out here.
Okay. No, you're the one that said Godzilla versus King Kong. You know, you want us to help you out? Fred and I are just looking at each other, waiting. All right, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I said a few weeks ago I thought the burden was on Trump in this debate. In other words, the pressure was on him not to collapse, not to fail, not to make a night where he goes, well, that's when he lost the race right there.
Right.
However, I've changed my mind on that. I think the pressure is on her because she is the one that's been dropping in the polls, and he's caught her now. And even in the battleground states, he's pulled even or caught her in many of these states. He has all the momentum, I guess you could say, right now, seemingly. Doesn't mean he's going to win. I'm just saying right at this moment in time. So if she needs to stop the downward spiral of Fred and resurrect herself as the one who's presidential.
And here's an indication that her camp is very worried because they're calling on the moderator, the Clinton camp is calling on the moderator, Lester Holt, NBC News anchor, to fact check Trump as they roll along. On the spot tonight. Now, remember the controversy with Mitt Romney back 4 years ago?
Candy Crowley.
And, of course, yeah, she fact-checked Romney and then was wrong, afterwards.
But the damage, was done.
But the damage was done. But I've said to folks, because this has been talked about, what happens if, Lester Holt does the same thing as Candy Crowley. Donald Trump is not Mitt Romney. Donald Trump would call Lester Holt on that on the spot.
Right.
He would. And Lester Holt has to be aware of that. He's a smart man.
Well,
he has to be aware. If I start fact-checking Donald Trump just to appease the Clinton crowd, Donald Trump is going to jump my case right there on live television.
Well, and it's also bad. Going forward, it's bad for debates and politics because a host like that could be wrong, like Candy Crowley was.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes these facts are a matter of interpretation.
Yes.
So you've got to be very careful. The public opinion of journalism in this country is already in the basement. You start making it clear to the watching audience that you're playing a part in trying to choose somebody. That's bad for our political process. Yeah.
I think why there's another reason why people will be watching this tonight, obviously what happened on Friday with Senator Ted Cruz coming out and saying he is going to vote for Donald Trump.
Right.
That has to increase that wave of support behind Donald Trump as well. So there's just the timing by Ted Cruz was incredible, just the Friday before tonight's debate.
Right. I'm not a betting man, okay? I'm not a betting man, but I want to take the over-under question. Do y'all know what I'm talking about?
I'm not a betting man.
If you don't know
what over under is.
If you don't know what
I've heard it, but I don't know what it means.
The expression. All right. An over under in the betting world, again, I'm not a betting man, nor do we advocate gambling. But
right.
It would be somebody would say, okay, the two teams are going to score under or over 50 points combined.
Oh, I see.
So my over-under is how many times Trump says disaster tonight. I want to know, Ed, I'm going to write this down. How many times does Trump say disaster tonight during the debate? There's no money on this. I'm just
Can we add some phrases, too? All right, so disaster, 14 times.
Fred?
Yeah, I'd say a dozen.
Okay.
Dozen times.
I think
it's only an hour and a half.
The better thing is how many times he'll say, believe me. Okay. So when he says, well, you know, look.
All right, give me your number.
I say 25 times. He says, believe
I'm going to go
me.
With Fred on 12 times on disaster.
Yeah.
Now, believe me? What
Yeah,
now?
Believe me.
Believe me.
So
what?
I'm going to get that wall built. Believe me.
Okay, how many times?
I say 25 times.
Yeah.
25?
I'd go high on that, 35.
35. Yeah, he's.
Wow, 35 believe me's tonight?
Oh, believe me.
Believe me. See, it's like when a kid is a teenager or something, and he's always saying what. I had my parents always saying, stop saying what. They'd say, did you cut the grass? I'd go, what? And they say, I know you heard me.
Right.
Did you cut the grass? And I just say it was a filler.
Right,
you know?
Right,
and I
right.
think for Trump, believe me, is a filler.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get this solved. We're going to get this ISIS. The ISIS is dead. Believe me. He's going to say stuff like that all the time.
What anything that you think Hillary Clinton would be, is she apt to say? What's she going to do? I think she's pretty
polished.
I think she's going to point over. Well, he probably will, too. I think she's going to point over at Trump. But if she goes after Trump on temperament or she goes after him after being unqualified or he would be dangerous, I think he's going to take that personally and go right back. Whatever
I think that's their strategy. Their strategy is to make him go unhinged because yeah. that's the death of the Trump campaign.
So
if he looks unhinged, he's gonna have, you know, if he's president, he has his finger, he has the nuclear football, which is, you know, the description of the case where he supposedly has launch codes,
right,
or whatever. That's what the Clinton campaign wants. They want him,
yeah,
to look dangerous in office.
But I think
so
he could potentially make her look like a disaster in her foreign policy.
She can get unhinged sometimes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You heard her a while ago.
Yeah.
She can get angry and start. She did
remember at the Benghazi hearings?
Oh, yeah.
Why does it matter? What does it matter
what point
now?
Does it matter?
Yeah.
And she got mad at Bernie Sanders during the debates a couple of times. So
yeah.
She got a temper of her own.
Right.
That, well, this is, and I tell you what, the other thing that happened on the weekend, which just adds to all of this, the Clinton camp was going to have Mark Cuban, who is a steeply
Shark
critic.
Tank guy.
Shark Tank guy.
Yeah, he owns the Dallas Mavericks. Going to put him
on the front row so that.
He's been very critical of Trump.
He's got something against Trump personally. I don't know what it is, but go ahead.
But here's how the Trump camp responded. Okay, we're inviting Jennifer Flowers, and we're going to sit her in the front row.
One of the women that Bill Clinton was accused of having an affair with.
Yeah,
a long time affair.
Accused. I think it's pretty well confirmed.
Has he admitted it?
Associated Press puts it as a fact. One of the ones he had an affair with.
And now, see, that is the thing that's the wild card for Trump.
But the other
one's so quick on his feet at thinking of those kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to get, in a sense, in a verbal shoving match with him.
No.
I think he's pretty quick with the
counterpunch.
No,
that's what I'm saying. That's what my point is. If she starts what he considers hitting low below the belt, he will. He doesn't care about decorum.
Right. Right.
Kellyanne Conway, his handler,
right,
responded to this whole Jennifer Flowers
right.
thing. And they just put it out there. Kellyanne Conway said, we put it out there to show that he is a counterpuncher.
Right.
Right.
So he is not going to let Hillary Clinton get away with anything.
No.
You want to try nonsense, Hillary Clinton? I'll punch you right back.
Right. It's going to be interesting because...
Listen, I'm having my wife get wings. I'm having nachos. I mean, this is like the Super Bowl for me. You know, wings and nachos, man.
Wings and nachos.
I'll gain 5 pounds by tomorrow, but I'm going to enjoy watching this. This is a
All
big
right.
league brawl.
Well, it could very well determine who the next president will be, how these two perform tonight, because it's a neck and neck race right now, As I said, I think the burden is on her tonight to, you know, sort of appear more presidential than he.
Mm-hmm.
Because, but we'll see how it goes. Conventional wisdom would have told you that she is supposed to be well ahead right now,
right,
in the polls, because he's a novice. He is perceived by many as a loose cannon. But now he's changing that perception by staying on message and using the teleprompter and listened to coaching of his of people around him. Obviously, I think
not tweeting after 10 o'clock.
Right,
that was always your suggestion.
Exactly. So I think he's helped himself appearing more presidential.
Well, and let me just add to, you mentioned this earlier in terms of how many people are going to make up their minds or are going to be watching this who are on the fence. A recent Reuters poll says that half of America's likely voters will rely on the presidential debates, now that's plural, to help them make their choice. So this one being, and that's so about 50%. Of likely voters think the debates will help inform their decision. So this one is probably the most important. It's the first. So the stakes are incredibly high for both of these candidates.
She just better hope she doesn't have a coughing fit.
Well, that's right, Tim. I mean, we might joke about that, but the way it is in American politics, a physical weakness.
Right.
Look how much play that stumble she had getting into that limousine a few weeks ago. I mean, that was out there. That was being played every half hour on the networks. Here's another indication, and we've seen this in history. Was it Bush Sr. got sick at a dinner in Tokyo?
Yeah.
And fell back or something of that nature?
Right.
And that
got
was
food poisoning.
Ford falling down the steps of the aircraft.
He was a former football player for, I think, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a freak thing.
Yeah.
But the Chevy Chase... from Saturday Night Live, started playing Gerald Ford, and he would always trip and fall into things, and that becomes a part of what people think.
It gets ingrained, and we laugh about it, but it gets ingrained in there. There's a weakness. We don't want our president having that kind of weakness.
Right.
And so it plays into it.
You know, in and of itself, there's nothing political about a coughing fit, all right? It happens to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you can't control it sometimes. It doesn't mean you're deranged.
Right.
It doesn't mean
that you're seriously ill.
Or you're seriously ill or you're unfit for anything. But in this situation, in the world of reality TV and perception and anticipation, and if she has a coughing fit after all the attention's been put on her health, then, you know, Trump is just
because the context of that is some serious questions about her health. Mm-hmm. And so a coughing fit in that context makes people go, well, maybe there is something to it.
Well, add it on to everything that we see. And if he reaches out, Trump does with a glass of water. can I help you? Which is what he would do. He would do it, you know.
But he's got that plan.
And then he goes, he gets criticized. He goes, what? What?
I'm just trying to help.
Just
I'm
help
trying,
it.
Trying to try help this nice, poor old lady next
would,
to me.
Hey, everybody would crack up, though. That would be a funny. That would be a moment of the debate that you would see replayed over and over and over
and
again.
And he actually, I think, in a moment like that, I think following that up, he ought to say, look, that's a coughing fit. It happens to everyone. Folks, don't make. There's lots of reasons to vote against Hillary Clinton. Don't make that. Then he comes across as the chivalrous guy, you know?
You need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, but that's kind of sexist, isn't it? What you said?
Oh, well, feminists would go crazy if he walked over to offer her.
Right, offer her some water.
Help, you know, don't hold the door open for me. I'm not the weaker sex.
I wonder if
are you coughing, Tim? Are you okay?
Well, I just wonder if the pizza companies are their stock's gonna rise tonight like it does on Super Bowl Sunday.
I can't have any pizza.
We're getting
tonight.
Pizza.
I'm getting nachos.
Our whole family's getting together. It's like Christmas.
Are they really getting together?
Yeah, we're all in.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
I think we're gonna have a pre-debate meal. We're gonna have I don't know if we're gonna exchange gifts or not. It's going to be crazy.
It's big. It's huge.
It is historic.
We're going to be back after this break with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
Mm-hmm. Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Timothy Paul Jones, author of Practical Family Ministry.
Now, I, of course, being a very sharing child, decided when I found that snake that it needed to be shared. And so I happened to notice a girl named Rachel. And so I went up to Rachel and I shared the snake. I dropped it down the back of her jumper.
That's next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. A high school teacher in Long Island, New York, apparently has a problem with people who want to make America great again. Veronica Welsh, a teacher at Smithtown High School, posted a message on Facebook. Says kids who wear Donald Trump campaign gear are racist. This lady sounds like your average run-of-the-mill liberal indoctrinator who enjoys bullying children. A standard educational procedure in American public schools these days. A teacher in North Carolina actually had kids compare Hitler speeches and Trump speeches. Newsday reports the teacher in Long Island has been administratively reassigned. In other words, the superintendent has taken steps to make Smithtown High School great again. The first presidential debate is tonight on Fox News. You can join me on ToddStearns.com before and after the debate for my analysis and commentary, plus your comments on ToddStearns.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Fred Jackson, Fred's news director for American Family Radio News and also OneNewsNow.com. Fred, if people go to OneNewsNow.com, what will they find there?
Well, they'll find certainly what we've just been talking about, the big story of the day, lead up in the kind of pre-debate analysis of what's going to happen tonight and the comments coming from the various camps. That story is front and center this morning, but also we're going to talk about this in a moment, kind of the follow-up to this mall shooting on Friday in Burlington, just north of Seattle, 5 people dead there. And then we have another breaking story from this morning, another shooting, this one in Houston, Texas, at a mall there, 9 people shot. The gunman is dead. Police killed him. He's a lawyer, and all the police are saying the law firm he worked for had problems. But 9 people, one seriously injured in that incident in Houston this morning, happened around 6:30 this morning. And 3 have been released. I think another 5 are being treated in that case in Houston. But the one in Burlington, small community north of Seattle, between Seattle and the border, the Canadian border, small community there. People out shopping at the mall on Friday evening. This guy walks in. His name is Arkan Seddon. He walks into the mall with a rifle and opens fire. 4 women, 1 man dead. Amongst the women who were killed was a daughter and a mom. The mom was about 90-some years old. The daughter was in her 60s, shot dead. He walks away from that, but he is arrested about 24 hours later.
At a manhunt.
After a manhunt of that. And what we're finding out about this this young man, Arkan Seddon, first they were talking about him in the media as being Hispanic, looking at the cameras that were in the mall. But we have since found out that he is a Turkish immigrant. He is a permanent legal resident, according to his status. He's not a citizen, but he's immigrated here. He's legal in the country. He has had run-ins with the law before. Some of his neighbors who have been interviewed by reporters referred to him as being creepy. He behaved in a strange fashion.
Was he a jihadist, though? Because he's a Muslim.
Well, there are some reports out there this morning, some news agencies saying he has been known to say and praise Allah. Does that mean he's a jihadist? I don't know. But certainly, unlike the first reports, he's not Hispanic. He is a Muslim. And
I knew that looking at the video.
Yeah,
I knew that. You know, I want to say it was the Associated Press, but the reporter or reporters who first were talking about this story showed the video and the still picture of this fella. And they said Hispanic looking, right? Because he's brown skinned, I guess.
Dark hair.
But I saw his facial features. And you could see enough to me to say, no, that's Middle Eastern. That's not Mexico or Central America. I thought at the time, well, they're trying to protect the fact that he's a Muslim, so they want to call him Hispanic to keep people from thinking it's a jihadist. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
The PC crowd. Oh, we can't say he's a Muslim. Got to have to come up with something. Well, call him a Hispanic. But, of course, if I were Hispanic, I'd be offended by the fact that they jumped to that conclusion. But so we don't know at this point. I'm just saying it appears to have all the markings of what happened in Minnesota last week. Another lone wolf Muslim jihadist. He fits the profile. What is he, 25 years old?
20 years, just 20.
20 years old male, Turkish immigrant, came over here when he was a kid. And, you know, here's his chance to commit some jihad and go to paradise. Again.
Let me also mention now for the Houston, I'm reading an article now for the Houston shooting this morning at the mall. I'm just going to quote from this Fox News story. It says, asked if the shooting was an act of terrorism, the police chief said, I'm not ready to confirm that. And then it says the gunman was known to law enforcement. So I don't know what that means,
right.
But you know, I would imagine that.
Did they identify the guy, the killer?
Yes, because he was shot and killed.
In Houston, he was shot and killed,
but he's not been identified yet. But so the fact that he's known to law enforcement though means they know what his name is. So I don't know what that means, that he was known.
He's had run-ins with the law before, probably.
Might have, but he was this.
He was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether that means he was maybe on the, you know, prosecutor's staff. You see what I'm saying? If it was known in a workplace way because of what he does, maybe he's a defense attorney or something like that, and the police knew, or if they've been watching him.
Yeah.
That's what I always ask when I see that. So he was known to the law enforcement. What does that mean? Were you watching him? Was he on a watch list? What does that mean? So obviously, as we start getting more details from this latest shooting, we'll find out.
Well, we'll get the gun control press this afternoon. Of course, this is all going to be overshadowed tonight by the debate, but I'm just saying that, you know, when you have something like this happen, they're going to, here comes President Obama and others are going to say, we've got to have stricter gun laws, you know, to keep this from happening.
Here's the thing, too, about the Friday night incident that kind of captured my interest. Burlington is a very small community.
In the state of Washington,
just north of Seattle, very small community, kind of rural in nature. And it's a reminder that, you know, it's not safe anywhere in America anymore. It really isn't. You know, a lot of these terrorist incidents have occurred in big cities like Minneapolis, we saw, and you know, New York, places like Boston. But this is a small community, just a mall, like probably in your town mall.
Right.
And this guy walks in and starts shooting.
Yeah, and you know, it was a gun-free zone. I don't know that the killer knew that or not, but he was not supposed to be in there with a rifle.
Yeah, you're making fun of the PC people and the gun control people who think that posting a sign up that says gun-free zone is going to keep criminals with evil intent keep their guns out, while the rest of the people in the mall have no way to defend themselves. All they've got is Paul Blart, you know, mall cop.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing in Minnesota last week, I think. I'm just saying that people, if they're defenseless, and we're seeing this in Europe all the time, and the killer or would-be killer knows it, you're just sheep for the slaughter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So this guy, for example, goes into the mall in the state of Washington. He knows that nobody in there has a gun,
mm-hmm.
and so he can just mow them down. Whereas if he didn't know whether who might have a gun or not,
right,
then he may second guess. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It would give you pause mm-hmm. if you didn't know. That's what happened. You have an off-duty. It was an off-duty police officer.
Was it in Minnesota?
In Minnesota.
In Minnesota.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, who had a gun?
He was an NRA instructor too, wasn't he?
He had.
Yeah.
It was
National
an off-duty
Rifle
cop.
Association.
And thank
yeah.
God he was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And had his weapon.
To have places where you go and you say, no, nobody has guns, and the bad guys know that.
Right.
That's just. You're going to have more casualties. You're going to have more death because of that.
Well, here's the other thing about this shooter in Washington State.
And then
he had faced charges for assaulting his stepfather back several months ago. The judge told him not to have a gun in his possession. But that means nothing to a person intent in doing
right.
these things.
That's right.
They will get a weapon. You know, a judge's order doesn't mean anything to these people. He got a weapon. He went in. He went in first, apparently, the mall, looked around, went back out, had this rifle, went back in and opened fire on
these individuals. If your intent is to kill innocent
yes.
people, why would you care about breaking other laws along the way?
You don't.
I mean, you're just not going to care. You're not going to care if you speed, you know, except you don't want to get pulled over. So that's the conundrum for those who are firm believers in gun control, is that people who intend to murder other innocent people don't care about your laws.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones who follow the law are law-abiding citizens. They're the ones, as Tim mentions, that are sheep to the slaughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this is a loser for Hillary Clinton if she wants to champion take away your guns or gun control. Democrats don't usually say take away their guns.
Right.
But the laws that they pass, a lot of the laws that they want to pass, cut into the right to bear arms.
Right.
And so anyway, we'll see what happens with that. But I'll bet you find out that this fella in, what's his name in the state of Washington, 20-year-old?
Arkan Seaton?
Probably going to find out he's a jihadist because he is a 20-year-old Muslim male. He fits all the demographics
mm-hmm.
who seemingly murdered people without cause.
Well, he picked a soft target.
Or without provocation.
Right. Yeah.
That fits checks all the boxes for Islamic jihadist, is mm-hmm. what I'm saying.
If you were a betting man, that's what
Yeah, if I were a betting man, I would say he's going to.
They'll check his Facebook page.
These reporters and journalists and news media just bend over backwards not to have to say what I just said. They would rather it be a white supremacist guy, and then they could just go full tilt.
Right.
You know, they just hoping it's a white guy who's a Christian.
A Lutheran. Preferably yeah, a Lutheran or a Methodist.
Yeah, somebody they can, you know, Christian extremist. But
right.
They just can't get one. it's just always, always the same thing.
Gee, there's a pattern here.
Well, yeah, but they want to. They willfully, many of them, ignore it. Yeah. You're listening to today. Thank you, Fred.
All right,
Fred.
Good to be with you guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
You can come over to my house, Fred. We're having Tim hasn't invited us over for pizza, but
I got too many people. My family coming over here, and I can't. I only got so
can't
many.
Feed the whole staff.
Well, I only got so many discounts for the pizza. I got 2-for-1s, but I can't feed the world. Today's Issues is the name of the program you're listening to on American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Hey, if you'd like to send us an email, again, as long as it's positive and encouraging or things of that nature,
right.
You can do that at comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net is our website. Excuse me, is our email. Our website is afr.net for American Family Radio, afr.net. Next up, Ed.
Yeah, we wanted to talk to Don Whitney, who's professor of biblical spirituality at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. And he's author of the book that's a very a concise book simply titled Family Worship. Don, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Hey, what is the it says here your PhD is from the University of Free State. University of the Free State.
Yeah, that's in South Africa. You may have heard of the Orange Free State before. That's where this school is located in South Africa.
Oh, you did you were you there? Did you go to South Africa?
I was there, but for very little part of PhD. Most of it, it's on the British model, and it was a thesis system. And so I had done a lot of the other work here on this side of the pond. And so most of what I did there was just the dissertation.
Okay.
Gotcha. And real quickly, I know what Ed wants to jump in with questions about the topic at hand, but you're professional biblical spirituality at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. So you teach every day? That's your job? You teach the students who are around?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a unique position. Just about every seminary will have a required class in spirituality, spiritual formation. They might call it Christian formation, a number of different things. But this is unique in that we have a full-time professorship. We have a department in the area of biblical spirituality. So I not only teach a required class in this, we have a program from MDiv all the way to a PhD in the subject of biblical spirituality.
Well, Don, let's talk about the subject of family worship. That's the title of your book. That's the themes. Very readable, very encouraging, and in fact, even convicting book of 60-something pages. So what is family worship? I mean, isn't worship something we do at church when the song leader tells us to stand? I mean, what is this? What is family worship?
Well, the Bible, I believe, divides worship up into primarily the congregational worship that you just described. But we also have, very importantly, our personal, private, our individual worship of God. But historically, there's been something that's sort of in between called social or family worship. It's not quite public in the sense that anyone who wants can come into the building and see us do it, so to speak. Whether it's with the family, it's with a smaller group, the household, but it's not by yourself. So it is with other people, but a limited scope of people in your own home.
Well, so help our listeners, for those who are listening, give us a biblical definition of worship. I think most Christians think worship is singing, but the biblical word is much broader than that. And then relate whether or not you're taking a part of that definition and applying it to the family life.
Yeah, well, I you know, you could come up with definitions of worship that would be a page in length, and you could nuance them, you know, in such a way that they might be much, much more precise, but totally forgettable. But I describe it as focusing on and responding to God. That's worship, whether you're alone with God, whether you're in the congregation, whether you're in the family. It's focusing on and responding to God. And my argument is, if you'll focus on a being as great and glorious and powerful as God, you will respond. Worship is not produced. It's evoked. You don't crank out worship. It is a response to beholding God. And that is done primarily through the Word of God. This is God's revelation. He reveals himself generally in creation. And yes, we can worship God there, but you'll never hear of Jesus there. And so that's why the person who says, well, I can worship God just as well in the deer woods or at the lake or in the mountains or in my home as I can at your church, that's not true. Now, if a person can't worship there, they're not a Christian. Spurgeon said, all places are places of worship to the Christian. We take the temple of God with us wherever we go.
Even the golf course?
Seven times to one, the New Testament says the church is the temple of the Holy Spirit. So in gathering with the people of God, worship occurs there more clearly. And that's because you won't hear of Jesus in the mountains or in creation. That's in a place where the Bible is opened and preached and read and taught.
Mm. Excuse me for interrupting you there with a off the wall question there. Donald Whitney, our guest. I said even at the golf course. What I was referring to was you do hear the reasons for people not going to church to express themselves in corporate worship and individual worship is because they say they can worship in nature. So hunting, fishing, golfing, I guess skydiving would
or anywhere in your own home. I mean, without.
But isn't that
the Bible or anything? Yeah, like I said, if you can't worship there, you're not a Christian because all places are places of worship to the Christian. The jail cell, you know, we see Paul and Silas doing that. But the clearest revelation of God is going to be where the Bible is preached, biblically sound music is sung, the Word of God is read. And through the Bible is the clearest revelation of God, not in nature. You don't hear of Jesus in nature. You don't have the cross in the mountains. So that only reveals God as creator out there, and that's worthy of response and worship. But it is limited in comparison to the places where the Word of God is opened and read and preached and sung.
Yeah. I guess what I meant, was that's using the excuse for...
Right, exactly. And the short answer to that is, no, you can't.
That's good.
And if you can, you're probably not worshiping in either place. So.
That's true. Hey, listen, Don, one of the things that was very touching in your book, and I want to recommend people get it, and we still have some time, we'll dig in a little bit more here, but one of the most powerful sections of it is when you relate a story that was sent to you or told to you by a friend about someone who had four siblings whose parents were having their 50th wedding anniversary, and all five children decided to express thanks to the mother and father, but they didn't consult one another. And it was really kind of telling. Explain to our listening audience what those five siblings discovered.
Yeah, and if I were to mention this guy's name, some of your listeners would possibly know him. He's a fine man of God. And he said that all five of them, without consulting each other, thanked their mother for her prayers. And all five of them thanked their father for his leadership of family worship. And one of the brothers said that, when he was 3 years old, he remembers in family worship of being impressed that God is real. And he said even though later in his teen years and so forth, he wandered from the things of God, he could never escape those early impressions given him in family worship. And today that man is an elder in his church. And so this early, strong impact of family worship is really immeasurable.
So what would family worship look like? When our listeners are trying to picture in their minds what this might look like in their homes, help them out.
Well, first of all, I want them to see it in their home. We tend to think of family worship as something only couples with small children in a home do. When Peter says, husbands, live your wives in an understanding way and so forth so that your prayers will not be hindered, it doesn't say fathers there. It says husband. So family worship is for couples that are just married and don't have children, all the way through to empty nesters on the other end. This is for all families. And so single parents with children. So this is for all families, first of all. And in most cases, it's going to involve, I believe, and I could support this biblically, I think, if I had the time, which I don't, but would involve the intake of the Word of God, prayer, and singing. It's very simple. Read, pray, sing. Read the Bible, pray together, sing together. No preparation is required. If you have something that you've come across you want to share with a family, that's great, but it's not required. I've never prepared. Just pick up the Bible, open up to where you left off last time, read, pray, sing. And most cases, maybe about 10 minutes or so. If your children are very, very young and very short attention spans, it's probably going to be more brief. You can always lengthen it if people have questions or things you want to talk about. But about 10 minutes, no preparation. Anyone can do this. A man who feels as though he doesn't know the Bible very well, or his wife may be more spiritually mature, nevertheless, he can lead his family in this way, because all he has to do is read, pray, sing. Anyone can do that.
Well, you cite, and by the way, folks, just to reset things, we're talking to Don Whitney, W-H-I-T-N-E-Y, who's professor of biblical spirituality at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's written a book titled Family Worship. Don, you mentioned, you cite a BBC report in your book, which says that researchers have found that family conversation has degenerated into a series of, quote, monosyllabic grunts. So with everyone on their cell phone or their iPad or watching television, how do you make that transition from just grunting at each other, locked onto a screen, small or large, to a family worship time that actually requires expression in front of one another?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a discipline, the intentionality to get everyone together, whether you have to create any time for that or you add it on to the evening meal or something like that. It is this intentionality, getting everyone together for this few brief moments. And you engage everyone by reading the Bible, and their job, of course, would be to listen. Maybe you take turns reading it. Everyone sings. The prayer time could be either one person or every person there prays. But one thing that's not in the book, it's a story on my website that I wish I had been able to include in the book, but about my daughter, who is now grown, has presented us 4 months ago with her first grandson, and we're thrilled with that.
Congratulations.
But, thank you. She, you know, to this day, when she and her husband and their baby are with us, you know what family worship looked like? To this day, I mean, I will be there, and I will say, hey, would y'all put your phone down, please? You know, I'm reading the Bible here. And so if anyone gets the idea that if they do this right, that the children are there with their hands folded and giving rapt attention to their parents and these cherubic faces, you know, that's not going to happen. Family worship happens with real families in the real family room. And what happens in that scenario? Three-year-olds are rolling around on the floor. Other people, you know, are tempted to look at their phones. And that's real. But you persevere through that, and though it's like an oak tree, you don't perceive day-to-day significant changes. The impact of family worship like that is more cumulative, I say, not episodic. But at her graduation from a classical Christian school where my daughter attended, the tradition there was for the parents to present the diploma, speak a few words of encouragement to their student, and for the student to respond with prepared words to the parents. And my daughter spoke to my wife and thanked her. And when she began to speak to me about what family worship had meant to her, she couldn't finish. And she collapsed on me. And my favorite picture of us together is of her weeping. And I mean harder than she had since a preschooler. And it was over her emotion about what family worship had meant to her. And guys, if in the thousands of nights that led up to that event, not one time would I have said, oh, the Spirit of God came powerfully upon us tonight. Yeah. We were on our faces before God. I mean, most of the time we got it from that, and I wondered, you know, did anything happen? Did anything good actually occur here tonight?
Right.
But over the years, you know, God, well, the Word did its work, and God, hey, the Holy Spirit, worked through the Word of God and did a lasting work.
Hey, Don, we are fresh out of time. You got about 10 seconds. Give your website.
Yes, thank you. It's biblicalspirituality.org.
Our guest is Don Whitney. His book is Family Worship. Don, great, timely book. I encourage people to get a copy of it. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a time out for news and information right here, and we'll be back after the break with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. We'll see you back here in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.